And then I lived in Chicago till I was about 18. And then I moved back to New York for a good 10 years.
And that's when you studied in New York?
I certainly did. That's where I learned how to play, you know, when I went to New York, right when I got out of high school.
Jazz wasn't always your thing, was it?
Well, I was a baseball player before that. Yeah, no, I started playing jazz when I started playing the piano. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I started kind of late in playing music in general. You know, I started when I was about 15. But yeah, no, jazz was always the thing that I played first, you know,
okay.
Even though I grew up listening to, like, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie Wonder and Led Zeppelin and all those kind of things. Yeah, jazz is actually what I tried to play first.
Yeah.
And then I tried to play, and then I learned how to play classical afterwards.
Right.
When I realized that I couldn't play the piano. And I was given some very sound advice, you know, that if you really want to learn how to really play the instrument, you need to learn how to play Bach and Beethoven. And
to get that grounding.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
How do you value that grounding now?
Immensely, you know. I mean, it really just all comes down to technique, you know, so you can, not that I have a tremendous amount of technique, but enough technique to express what you want to express through the instrument. You know, you have to have a certain amount of technique, you know, and unless you're gifted at it naturally, which some people are, I actually had to work at it, you know, to get a sound out of the piano. And I think that's probably what I learned mostly from studying, you know, when I was at Manhattan School of Music, was learning how to get a good sound out of the instrument and how to relax, and I'm still working on it.
Yeah. Growing up, your parents' musical influence on you?
My dad, yeah, we had a lot of records. We had Nat King Cole records, Dinah Washington. But at the same time, my dad was kind of an old hippie, so we had a lot of different stuff, a lot of Beatles albums, a lot of Bob Dylan, and Jefferson Airplane, actually, was what it was originally called. All kinds of music, you know, but the jazz thing was actually came about through a family member. My grandfather was friends with Warren Vacher, and I met Warren when I was 16 years old, and that's what got me into jazz. I met him at my grandfather's funeral. My grandfather passed. I went out to New Jersey, and I happened to meet him. That really changed my life. That in that moment, you know, because he took me back to his house and played me records. I remember he played me an album of Bobby Hackett, and it just, you know, changed my life. Told me to sit down, listen to this, and it was quite monumental at the time.
And do you miss the life in Chicago?
Well, I do. I miss it. You know, I mean, I miss the life in New York probably more than anything.
Right.
Because that's where a lot of my musical friends are.
Yes.
To this day, and I'm still friends with, you know, all the people I was friends with 30 years ago. So I do miss it, but I've got two boys here now, and, you know, my life kind of calls, and that's the way it is.
Is it easy to get back over there, you know, the life of a musician as far as being able to perform over there? And
it is. It's not that I was home a year ago for the month of July, so it's not as easy as I'd like it to be to go back and forth, because, like I said, my life is here now, and it's not like Tasmania.
Yes, that's right.
I, you know, I wish it was, but, you know, maybe I don't, but I love Tasmania, by the way. I've been there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not, it's a matter of, it's a distance thing. And after a while, it just gets harder and harder to go back. Mm. You know, you get entrenched here, just like Matt was saying, making a living. And that's really kind of what it comes down to.
And I guess when these guys like Wycliffe Gordon come out, then you make the most of it and you record and you perform
that's
together.
That's exactly what I did when Wycliffe came. We played together last year for, I think we did about four gigs together. I happened to be planning to do this album anyway. And I just asked him after one of our last gigs, and I said, you know, you're free on Monday. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I'm free. So I said, you know, it'd be an honor if you came along and played with us. So he did, and it was fantastic. He came in and did a fantastic job. And, you know, we recorded for about 2 hours with him and I think about an hour on our own, some of the other tracks. We did two different sessions that make up that album. So, but we were pretty comfortable with each other because we'd spent, you know, about a week together doing different things.
And performing live.
Yeah, yeah, doing things at Manly, and then we did something at SEMA at the Sound Lounge, and he's a wonderful guy and just a real easy person to get along with. And
these are all standards, well, I guess not all of them jazz standards, so to speak, but they're all from the people like Duke Ellington, Hank Mobley, Charlie Parker.
Right.
A couple of from the American Songbook. When I think of the John Harkins Trio, and I've been seeing you gig around town and various festivals now for some years, I see it taking the mantle, so to speak, from the Bobby Gebbert Trio. The Bobby Gebbert Trio, I guess, was pretty prominent in the late 80s and throughout the 1990s for being a magnet for the touring soloist, and your trio has certainly sort of taken that role on. Why do you think the trio, your trio, that is in so much demand for that role?
Well, I've simply, I think, just because we swing in a way that's just kind of straight ahead, you know. I know that Bobby and I both like the same piano players. You know, we like Cedar Walton and Tommy Flanagan and Hank Jones and those kind of piano players, you know, bebop and post-bebop piano players. And it's the reason why I like Andrew Dickinson and Brandon Clark and Jonathan Schwartz, who used to play with Bob, you know. It's just, we just kind of suit each other. You know, we like the same kind of music, and I think it's as simple as that. As far as people liking us, maybe it's got something to do with me being an American, but I don't know. I hope that it's got something to do with just the fact that I swing.
You're bad.
When I play, I try to swing. I mean, I try. You know, that's the thing. You have to actually try to swing. You know, it doesn't just happen initially, and sometimes it doesn't happen initially on any given day, and you really have to work at it. You know, I think to get the phrasing right. I mean, I'm not a complicated kind of piano player, so I just try to approach things in a very simple way. I'm a complicated person, but I try to be a simple piano player.
Oh, fair enough. Just some of the other tracks here, Hank Mobley, High and Flighty. That's a tune that we don't hear too often as well.
You don't hear that. Very few people know that. Very few musicians know that song. It's a song that I learned off of a Lee Morgan, Hank Mobley album, a Blue Note record. It's just something that I kind of learned a long time ago, and I brought it back for that session. I figured Wycliffe, and he came in and played the hell out of it.
A lot of your repertoire, that's how you come to develop it, from going back and listening to those lesser known Blue Note albums, for example,
you know, anything that's good, you know, any albums. There's albums from the 80s and that I like too, you know.
Yeah
there's I just kind of like to hear, you know, I like to pick songs that are not usually done too much, and try to just kind of, I need to play them for a while, actually. I need to play them for a while in order to be able to play them my way.
Right.
Which is not necessarily better than the original, but just to try to learn to play it my way.
To put your own DNA into it.
Yeah, exactly. So I need to spend some time with some of these songs. But yeah, a lot of those tunes I've been playing for a while on this album. But My Heart Stood Still is kind of relatively new. I wrote the arrangement for that just about a week before we recorded. And sometimes it's good to just do things fresh. You get a different thing, you know.
That's right.
So
that's jazz, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to make an album of songs that are written mostly by jazz musicians. So hence, you know, the Duke Ellington, Charlie Parker, Barry Harris, and there's I think there's, of course, Over the Rainbow is on there, which was one of my favorite songs of all time, just since I was a little boy. It's just a beautiful melody.
It is,
isn't it? One of the great songs. So, and that's relatively new also. We didn't really play that till recently, so.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Sydney jazz scene, because it's always good to get a perspective from someone who, has a good understanding of the scene elsewhere. What would you change about the Sydney jazz scene if you could?
More pianos. Simply put, we'd rather play a lousy piano than an electric one any day. So, I mean, really, seriously, it's really hard to be a piano player, and it's like the one instrument that we practice, or that anybody in the band practices at home, and then you have to go and, you know, play an entirely different instrument.
Yes.
You know, usually electric keyboard, and that's not a piano, so it's a real letdown. But aside from that, I mean, this is just a general plea to anybody, you know, who wants to open up a jazz club. There's just not a lot of places to play. I mean, it's the reason why, I mean, one of the reasons why I love to play at that Cafe Church is because they've got a great piano, and it's a great room, you know, it's a great room for listening. Just the vibe, what they do with the room, they convert it, and there's a really excellent piano. I'm just kind of, that's really my thing right now is just, I'm on a mission to try to find pianos, places to play that have pianos. I mean, because we play with the trio, all, you know, we can do different things. I don't get the same enjoyment from playing electric keyboard.
Now, with digital pianos, for example,
yeah,
are they any better than electric keyboards?
They're all the same. They're electric.
So what you're saying is even a funky old upright...
Rather play it any day than the $7,000 digital piano. For playing jazz with my trio.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, if you're playing with a singer and it maybe it's something different, you know, if you're doing something that's not quite straight ahead or playing bebop, if you're playing a little bit more R&B or something like that, you know, that's a different story, you know. Then I can appreciate why that instrument would be better. And there are situations where it is better sometimes, but not usually.
It must be
frustrating, you know. It
must be frustrating for you then when you perform at these festivals, for example, where a lot of the time, you know, there might only be a baby grand on one of the stages and the rest of them have got these...
Exactly. Well, that's the great thing about playing in Manly. There's always, I mean, I usually get to play a grand piano at least once or twice. And this year, yeah, I'll be getting to play the piano all the time. So on the ocean front stage, they've got a nice grand. And then at the college, it is Stella Maris Girls College. That's where the concert is. They have a nice piano in there too. So it is a point... Because the thing is, it's not that expensive to hire a piano. You know, even if it's an upright, they hire a piano for the weekend. It doesn't cost that much money for the festival. I don't know why they don't do it more. Because anywhere else in the world, there's always pianos when they have a jazz festival. You know, you can't. You know, for piano players, you can't get the jazz sound out of an electric keyboard. I don't care who it is. You can't. You can't do it. You know, and especially, you know. Well, that's what we work on, is trying to get that sound out, and that's all I can say.
You know, to play devil's advocate, then you could say, well, you know, what about your Chick Careers and you know, your Keith Jarretts and so forth?
That's true, but they're all back to playing the piano. You know, I mean, Keith Jarretts has been playing the acoustic piano, you know, again, since, you know, 1980.
Yeah.
And he hasn't looked back. I mean, and yeah, I know that Chick played... a lot of keyboards, but that was his electric band, you know, that he brought to the opera house, and I was actually hoping he was going to play the grand piano more, because he's one of my all-time favorite piano players. He had a big influence on me when I was a kid, listening to him play the piano, you know, on certain albums, Sweet Rain album with Stan Getz, which is one of the beautiful albums. So, but most of those guys have gotten back to playing the piano. I mean, Herbie, because I think that they just... They're tired of it.
They've gone full circle.
Yeah, everybody played the electric piano. I mean, Tommy Flanagan made records on the Fender Rhodes, and Hank Jones made records playing the Wurlitzer in the 60s. But I think it was, you know, and Bill Evans, of course, you know. But you know, all the serious piano players, they all just came back to playing the piano, because that's where the joy is, I think, for anybody who plays the piano. Imagine giving a classical concert on a keyboard, playing Beethoven on. They wouldn't do it. It's just like, you know, they would not do it.
And this interview is not about Bobby Gebbert, by the way, but just getting back to something that he told me many years ago. He said to me, it's better to be a good copier than a poor originator. I was going to ask you about your own music, you're writing your own original tunes.
Right.
Do you write many?
I have written a few, but I don't play them. I don't play them. For probably that very good reason, what Bobby said. I mean, I've never felt that I can write a song that's comparable to anything that Duke Ellington or Charlie Parker wrote, or anybody like that. I've tried, you know, and it just kind of, I'm always comes back to, well, I'm always comparing it to I've written pop tunes.
Yes.
Actually, I've written pop tunes, R&B tunes that I've played in public.
So you're trying to bring your own originality to these tunes that you're taking from someone else's songbook.
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm just still trying to. I just like, you know, the way the guys that I all learned from how to play are not necessarily composers, so to speak. You know, all my favorite piano players, except for guys like Cedar Walton, you know, and Bud Powell, but and Wynton Kelly. But I think that there's enough for me. I'm just speaking about my own thing. There's enough for me to that I get fulfillment out of playing all those classic tunes that I would for writing my own thing. That is a pale imitation. And sometimes when I hear people write in that style, it's just like, well, I don't see the point. Why play an imitation of a Benny Golson composition when you can actually play a Benny Golson composition? You know, who's going to write something that's close to Whisper Not? You know, that's as good. It's like, well, I don't know. You know, I find it, I don't mind doing it sometimes, but again, I think it's the reason why those melodies stand up the way they do, you know, like Prelude to a Kiss.
Yes.
It's hard to write a ballad like that. You know, it's hard to write a ballad like I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good. It's hard to write a Thelonious Monk type song without going past off minor. It's like, how are you going to, you know, of course you can try to write something angular like that, but it's still not going to be a genius composition the way that one is. I stopped worrying about that a long time ago. I like to arrange those songs. I get it. That's where I kind of, you know, fit that role of composing a bit, because I put introductions and endings or some, you know, a couple of different chord changes in there that are kind of my own little.
So that's where the John Harkins thing.
You know, it's kind of more. Then I kind of like say, well, this is what I'd like to do. You know, on this thing, I can put a chord in there or change, you know, turn a phrase or something that's my own way.
I guess the antithesis of all this is that someone's got a John Harkins CD next to a Thelonious Monk. Are they necessarily going to pick up your album because you've recorded a Thelonious Monk when they've got Thelonious Monk right next door? You see,
yeah.
You see what I'm...
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I hope they listen to the Thelonious Monk CD. Andrew Spade had made a very good point to me. We were talking about this a couple of years ago. Like you said in the beginning of the show, you know, the Kind of Blue and the other album, Giant Steps, are actually the two biggest sellers in the history of jazz, the largest instrumentals. Perennially, around the world, those albums, there's a reason why they sell continuously, because they're great. And so even a Wynton Marsalis album, it doesn't matter. A Wynton Marsalis album, whoever, he's the name that comes to mind, people will listen to it once or twice, and then they'll put it away. And they do that with my album. I know they do that with other people's albums. But with albums, when you're talking about Kind of Blue, you keep on going back to it. There's a reason for it, you know.
The quest for you, then, is to continue this pursuit of putting the John Harkins stamp on some of these great melodies.
I would say it is, yeah.
Barry Harris's Nascimento.
Yeah.
What have you tried to do with this?
Okay, well, I've been playing this song for a long time, and I actually heard this song one night in New York City a long time ago. When Barry first wrote it, I had the privilege of being at Bradley's Jazz Club when there was about 10 other piano players, all the heavy piano players in New York at the time, like Kirk Lightsey, Ronnie Matthews. Barry was playing the piano, and he just introduced this song, and what he did, he went around the room. They played the song for about an hour and 15 minutes. And he had every piano player that was in the bar, it was about 2:30 in the morning at that point, come up and play the song. And they'd never heard it before. So, and it's got a lot of changes. Anyway, I've played it a lot that I've just, you know, put a couple different things in there that, you know, I don't want to listen to. I've listened to Barry play it, of course, and when I listen to it, I go, oh, no, I missed that, and oh, I did that. But then if I steal it exactly, then it's just kind of like, it's not really, there comes a point when it's not really jazz, you know? You have to just kind of say, okay, well, this is what I heard first, and I'm going to try to just stick to this, you know, because you can play transcriptions. But that's not really jazz to me. I don't play transcriptions. I never have. I'm influenced by things, but I don't play written solos. You know, I don't do it. It's, to me, it's not jazz. It's too hard.
It's got to be spontaneous.
It's got to be spontaneous, and that's the thing about being, you know, having a, whatever gifts that I have as an improviser, I'm able to do that. I'm able to just kind of play my own lines for the most part, even though there, of course, I steal things from my favorite piano players, because that's how you learn how to play. That's how you get a jazz sound. But I think that there comes a point when I stop listening a lot to people that I used to listen to out of fear of just trying to sound like them all the time, which I did for years. I used to just try to imitate the way Nat King Cole played and the way that Tommy Flanagan and the way that Wynton Kelly played. And I've actually stopped listening to a lot, as much as I used to, because I just was like, I don't want to...
Yeah,
I can't help it, but just try to go to the piano and try to sound like that.
Yeah, you want to try and sound like John Harkins. Yeah,
exactly. Mm. And that takes a long time to get to, so sometimes it's good to just put it all aside and just play.
John Harkins, thanks for joining me in the studio tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.